Hi, I'm Zahn Valines, and this is the Liberating Motherhood Podcast, and this is our monthly bonus episode for paid subscribers. If you're new to our bonus episodes, they are poorly thought out, poorly planned, unoutlined episodes that Jeff and I come up with, and then you can choose to pay to listen to them. I'm here today with Jeff.
No, they're free for people who have paid.
They're free for people who have paid. That's what makes them a bonus.
And free.
So that's Jeff. He's here too.
Hi, I'm Jeff. I'm Zahn's husband.
So Jeff and I have not been together all day because we've been working. So this is kind of like our first interaction of the day.
True.
So I'm real fucking pissed off.
Oh.
I'm really mad at men today. So that's what we're coming into this in.
Okay.
So I don't understand what the fuck is wrong with your people.
They're not my people.
So this month...
I'm a man.
This month we're talking about the patriarchal playbook. I use this term to refer to the collection of excuses, scripts, nonsense, bullshit, and other actions that men use to guard their patriarchal privilege. These are things that men do unthinkingly. But once you start to observe the trend, it really does start to seem like they're given a secret book that they... weaponize against us. So, Jeff, do you get a secret book?
The secret book is called Society, and all of the TV shows we watched growing up, and all of the it's just called what is the word for the culture, the
enculturation, patriarchy.
Yeah, there's a better one. I can't think of it.
But socialization.
All of those, but there's still a better one. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, it's out there. It's not explicit, but it is also very explicit.
Yeah, so I think the thing that's most interesting is that patriarchy separates women from other women. So women in adulthood often don't really have a good idea of what other women's lives are like. And then they start reading me, and the feedback that they often give me is they thought that it was just them. They thought that their husband was unique and special and meant well. But he's actually just exactly like all the other husbands, because patriarchy really offers like one standard issue heterosexual relationship. And so these women are shocked to learn that other men are using the exact same lines and excuses their partners do, even in vastly different circumstances, even if those lines and excuses are not relevant to them. I've covered this extensively in my Weapons Men Use series, and I recently did a piece on what abusive men do when their partners leave, and it's formulaic, and people have written me and been like, are you in my house? Are you stalking my husband? Like, how do you know this? And it's because the men who have endorsed this ideology are like all the same.
Well, there's a limited number of ways that they can react. You know, there's only so many ways a person can react to being left, and you know, most of them, especially so many abusive ways that someone's going to react to it.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it's surprising. You know, what I find so troubling is like, I can see, like, in isolation throughout the course of our relationship, I know that I have used lines, just things. I've seen echoes of things, like, in my past. And I always, I can see you getting uncomfortable. Like, no, because I'm always really ignorant of the degree of how terrible things are. And so I think anytime, you know, I say something like that, Zahn starts to think that, I don't know what you start to think when I say something like that, but what I'm driving at is, it's not like I wasn't raised in the same society as these guys. It's not like I wasn't in the same fraternities as these guys, or didn't like train with these guys, or didn't play sports with these guys, whatever. So like, I know them. The troubling thing is like, I left that shit behind like long ago. And when I say that shit, I mean like small elements of this stuff.
So the reason I just want to jump in here. Yeah. The reason I get uncomfortable, there's this weird dynamic where like, in order to be a not sexist man, you have to like own the way the patriarchy has socialized you and own like the way it benefits you. But in the context of this podcast and in the context of our readership, or my readership, I guess.
Yes, yours.
Mine. Jeff is not
writing. I'm just here to help.
Yeah. Anyway. We have a lot of women who are looking for guidance in terms of essentially what to accept from men. And so they hear you say, well, like, I used to do that, or I did do some of that. And they think, oh, he must have called her a cunt. And, you know, he can learn not to do that. And so my guy, this guy that I'm dating, can learn not to do that too. And so, like, I just always feel the need to clarify that when Jeff says, like, he has done some of this stuff, he's not doing any of the kinds of things you think and never did.
Yeah, so let's put a finer point on it then. I'm talking about things like deflecting in a fight.
Yeah.
Blaming the other person. You know, they have a problem with you, you're going to have a problem with them. Mm-hmm. You amplify your problem big enough, you know, then they wind up apologizing when you were originally in the wrong. I'm talking about stuff like that. And that can happen in any relationship, you know, but I'm talking about things like that. I'm talking about things like, I don't know, just being condescending about something.
Yeah.
Thinking that I know more than I do. Things like this. I'm not talking about name calling. I'm not talking about, like, getting physical or getting intentionally, like, threatening at all. Like, that sort of stuff that's just weak stuff. I don't get why men do that. But what I'm driving at is, like, you know, it's not supposed to get worse as you get older. It's supposed to get better. Yeah. You're supposed to get wiser. You're supposed to understand your partner better as you go along. And you're supposed to leave the stuff behind so that when she brings a problem to you, you don't get defensive about it because you have some confidence and you don't feel so criticized. And, you know, because you're a fucking man who's a grown up and who can handle things.
And okay, so that's like, I think that's actually like an interesting point and just kind of like a side tangent for women dating men. The normal development of like the human person is that ideally you're getting wiser with age. I am a much better partner than I was 15 years ago or even 5 years ago, and a much stabler, better person because, like, I've accumulated many, many, many more skills. And that should be the normal, like, course of development, that, like, you get better at your relationship as you get older. Your partner gets better at relating as they get older. And that's certainly been the reality for Jeff and me. For most men, it's that they start out bad and they get worse because patriarchy enables them.
Yeah, but what I don't understand about these guys is, like, okay, do you like fighting with your spouse? No, right? Fighting makes everyone feel like shit. So why aren't you getting better at avoiding fights? Is it because...
Oh, I think they are getting better at it. They're getting better at making it so that their partners can't bring up problems. And all of the problems are generally with the man, because the problems with the woman, they exist. They're just so much smaller than the problems with the man that, like, they never get broached.
Yeah, no, they're getting better at it by shutting it down.
Yeah.
And they're shutting it down because they're just angry and they're going to be intimidating and they're going to make it hell to pay. Mm-hmm. Make there be hell to pay if she brings something up. And so
I think there's also some pleasure in these fights for these guys.
I'm sure there's like a substantial contingent of them who get off on being, you know, feared. Like, you know, you're going to your shitty job, your boss is talking shit to you, you know, you're weak, you're you know, whatever, you don't make enough money, so you feel like shit. And then you go home and you're gonna be the tough guy. Now you're the one who's in control. And I think there's probably a lot about that. I mean, that's just weak bullshit. Like, I don't get it.
So I think, like, what's at the core of this, like, patriarchal playbook thing is, you and I often talk about, like, the woman appliance. And, you know, every man, like, gets a woman appliance. And if your woman appliance malfunctions, you just, like, replace her with a different one, or you, like, abuse her into being different. And I truly do think that this is the model of how most men approach their marriages. And so if you never learn how to relate meaningfully to a woman as anything other than a useful appliance, there's little to no emotional intimacy. There's not expanding knowledge of each other. There's not an acknowledgement of her, like, unique human dignity. And so there's no ability to see your partner as an individual whose needs matter, and no ability to, like, really see her as an individual at all. So men just experiment with what works, kind of like how we do when our fucking dishwasher just won't stop slamming open no matter how many times.
What do we do?
We fix it.
We just stop fixing it.
Well, we kept
it. I think that one breaks down. I don't think.
That's true. But we did experiment with different dishwasher repair people for a while to see if any of them could fix it.
I don't think this one works.
No. It's true.
It's okay.
It's fair. That's fair. Yeah, we didn't put a lot of effort into fixing the dishwasher. But, you know, like, if you don't really care about why someone is doing something, you just, like, keep pushing buttons until you see what works. And that's what these men are doing with their partners. They try this thing. That doesn't work. So they just pivot to the next thing. And before you know it, they've lopped, like, 10 things at the woman. And she's, like, overwhelmed. She's trying to respond to all of them. She's pretending that he's arguing in good faith. But he's just, like, seeing which combination of buttons will work.
Well, what about this question, like for a partner? It's like, what is the goal of this partnership? Is the goal that we support each other so that we each can accomplish more than we could alone? Or is the goal that I support you so that you can do what you want, mm-hmm. and I get to do what I want, which the man assumes is just doing everything.
Clean forever.
Cleaning, you know, dealing with the kids. And, you know, I think a lot of men, like, obviously think that that is what the relationship should be. And a lot of women dream of having the relationship where it's like, oh, yeah, we support each other so that we can both accomplish more in life. And, you know, we build each other up and we be each other's safe people. And, you know, like, that's what a partnership is. That's why two business partners form a partnership, right? Like, so they can pool resources. Now we can hire an assistant together and we can pay the rent and we can split the rent and then we'll split the profits and this will be great. But that's not how most relationships go. And I think if you're in a relationship where that is not the goal, and the goal is just to extract work from you, then why would you be in that relationship? And I guess the answer is because you're scared.
Yeah. So the thing that really makes this patriarchal playbook work, in my opinion, is, you know, once you really fully believe that, like, women are fully human and that their needs matter, it just becomes very obvious what these men are doing. That they're not cunning liars. They're just haphazardly, like, grabbing at whatever can work and using their patriarchal power to, like, intimidate women. But when you don't see women as fully people, it's harder to see. And most women have been socialized to not see themselves as meaningfully human in the same way that men are. We learn that we are entitled for wanting things, that the very act of wanting something is wrong. We learn that we have to give men a chance. We learn that we shouldn't be alone. You know, we learn that if someone is mad at us, it's always our fault. We learn that we can single-handedly fix men, fix relationships. We treat ourselves as, like, accommodations for broken men. And so women are coming to these arguments in good faith, and they're, like, trying to respond to the bullshit that these men are spewing at them. But these men don't even mean what they're saying.
Yeah, it's crazy to hear you, like, say, like, what women are raised to think, because I'll tell you what men are generally raised to think about relationships
and
about themselves. The most important thing in your life is your hobbies and how good you are at them. And the most important thing in a relationship is sex.
Yeah. And I think that's true. I think that's true, that that's what men learn. And I think
it is true. I'm telling you, that's what we learn. And like, when I talk about hobbies, I mean, like, you know, it's like that Fight Club speech of, like, everyone's raised to believe they're going to be, you know, astronaut or superstar or whatever, and they're not. And so, like, what do these men do when they realize that they're not going to fulfill their childhood dream of, you know, playing some professional sport they were never good at? They start an underground Fight Club. I mean, like, no, it's true.
Yeah.
And so, and they leave their wives at home with the kids.
Well, there's a corollary to that with women that I see a lot that I think is really important, which is that women are taught that it's fine to ask for equality as long as men don't have to give anything up. And so what that reduces to is, like, you can't actually ask for equality. Women believe that it is a tragedy for men to have to give anything up. If he's giving up his golf outing to come home and help you take care of the kids or to take the kids so that you can go do something that's important to you, that's asking too much. And, like, all of society will tell you that's asking too much. A core rule of patriarchy is that men should not have to give things up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's real nice if you don't give a shit about your spouse.
Yeah.
Because, like, I, that's the only way that you could be okay with that, is if you just don't give a shit and you only care about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I would like a world where you can pursue every whim and dream you have, like, with no consequences.
Oh, I could fill my time. I could never be home. I could have hobbies, unending, you know, weekly schedule, like, easily.
Yeah.
And what would that get me?
But, exactly. I would, like,
have to, because if I did that, you'd get pissed.
Yeah.
And so then what's my only option if I'm not going to give that up and you get pissed?
Right.
Control. And
right.
Right? Fear. Yeah. Threats.
Yeah. And so, like, the world that I prefer is the one where, like, you have a relationship with your children and don't die, like, with regrets. And frankly, die alone. Because, like, men wield this thing with women of, like, oh, you're going to die alone with your cats. And women don't die alone because women's children remain steadfastly loyal to them. They maintain emotional connections. They have friendships. It's men who die alone.
Right. But also, like, I mean, I say all of that. I could fill out my time and all this stuff. But, like, what's more important than being a parent?
Right.
What's more important than raising the next generation of humans? Why isn't that a hobby? Because, like, that's, I mean, it's obviously more than a hobby. But you get what I mean. Like, I could go rock climbing. Or I could take my kids to the playground and teach them how to, you know, go down the big slide or something like that for the first time. And it's like, why is that stuff not ingrained in men? I think just because boys are taught to play and taught to taught to do sports and taught to go off and do their own things, and their moms stay home and do all of the work, and, you know, generally probably didn't even complain much about it. My mother, obviously, let me know what was going on, but
relentlessly, endlessly, and stuff.
Yeah, and my dad wasn't near, you know, he was not these guys that everybody is all these stories. He wasn't even that, but my mom still let me know about it. But still, you know, that's how men are raised. And, you know, the question is, like, when do you stop acting like a boy who's entitled to things and entitled to pursue all of these ultimately meaningless things? And when do you actually grow the fuck up and realize that there are more important things, that people depend on you, and that your kids are what matter and your relationship is what matters? And, like, yeah, you can have time. You'd be surprised at how much you can get done in 20 minutes a day with a hobby, exercise, or, you know, music or whatever. Like, it's plenty of time. Just don't be a selfish asshole.
I mean, speak for yourself. My weightlifting isn't going so well.
Oh, you just haven't found the thing that you like yet.
It's because I fundamentally don't like exercise.
Oh.
That's
another thing. I wish I could just say, like, don't exercise. Because, like, that would be great. And the only concern is, you know, what does that look like for us when we're 60?
Jeff and I are both on, like, fitness kicks right now.
Because we're getting older.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, shit, we got to get this together so that we're, like, you know, these people we see in their 70s who are still kicking ass, as opposed to these other people we see in their 70s who are having trouble getting around. It's like, there's only one way to do that.
But so, anyway. Like, the way the exercise is going right now is that you know, Jeff comes upstairs after his weightlifting time and he's like, wow, I feel really great. And, you know, you just make progress if you just work really hard. And it's just, you know, it's just so happy. And, you know, you just have to keep trying. And, you know, it's amazing what you can do with consistency. And I come upstairs and I say, every day that I do this, I feel a little bit worse. And that is where we are right now. So maybe check back in with us in 6 months. Maybe it will reverse, but I don't think it will.
I don't know what to tell you, Zahn. I think you just got to find something that's fun.
All right. So, patriarchy playbook. I want to give a couple of examples because Jeff is like, I think that Jeff is very much divorced from like what typical men are like because he chooses not to associate with them. And
not true. I spent all day with two other guys.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not. Jeff is not hanging out with bros. He's just not.
No, that's true.
So, all right. One of the weirdest ones that keeps coming up in my group and in comments with friends and all of this is, what's the first thing a guy does when the woman says she's going to end the relationship? No matter how much time they've spent talking.
Cries.
Yes, there's crying. But then... he wants to talk. And, you know, the implicit message here is, okay, now I'm really ready to talk after all the talking you've done that I haven't listened to. But then he always does one better. And this is the weirdest part because, like, I would say, like, half of these men do it. They say, can we just go for a walk together? They want to go for a walk and they want to talk. I don't know why they want to go for a walk.
I think there's this notion of, like, you know, long romantic walk on the beach, walking, you know, it's kind of like occupational therapy where you're doing something else that enables you to share your true emotions, where he's going to, like, I don't know, what is he going to say on the walk?
No witnesses on the walk also. It's not like going to Starbucks where if you start pounding the table, people are going to notice.
True. I mean, I don't know what's happening on these walks.
But it's just weird. They all just have this let's go for a walk thing where they're suddenly trying to be like light and I don't know. So another thing that we see is fake remorse. You know, we all pretty much eventually learn that we have to apologize when we do something wrong and we have to come up with some way of fixing it. But these men feel...
Some of us, I mean...
Well, that's the thing. They don't actually feel remorse and they're not actually sorry.
Right.
And they don't feel like their partners... they owe their partners anything. So they have to like drum up some remorse to regain access to the appliance, but they don't actually feel remorseful. So it's fake remorse. And one of the things they do is like they'll recite a script and then they'll insist that, okay, it's all in the past now. Men have this notion that they are entitled to a clean slate continuously, which is weird because like everything you do is immediately in the past.
I mean, at a certain point, apologies can't just be verbal, right?
Like, right.
They have to be actual action sustained over a period of time. And, like, let's be real. Most men aren't going to do that. Most people can't just, like, you know, change how they live. You know, if it hasn't been a gradual process over the course of you know, months or years even, it's not going to be an immediate process.
Yeah.
It might be for a couple days, but it'll wane.
Well, and that's the fundamental thing here is that men can change, men can do better, men can improve. You know, to maintain otherwise would be to suggest that men don't have free will, which they obviously do. But men don't change. And the reason that they don't change is that if you're able to buy your free time, your leisure, your rest, your whatever, with your partner suffering, and be okay with that, then you don't actually care about your partner as a person in a meaningful way. And so when the chips are down and like that person is threatening to leave you, the odds are very, very good that these guys are just going to look for a new partner rather than change because they never actually cared about the partner. Like if your partner has behaved in this way, they just don't care about you in the ways that actually matter. And that is why change is so difficult. It is also why so many of these men propose fake solutions. So, for example, rather than saying, all right, starting tomorrow morning, I am going to get up with the kids every day when they wake up, no matter what, forever. He says, I'm going to make a list of therapists to call. And then maybe in 3 more weeks, I'll call them. And then maybe in 3 more weeks after that, you'll go to therapy where he can gaslight you. And for all of that time, he's been getting more free labor from you. And you've been feeling like he's doing something because, well, he's looking into therapy or he's going to therapy or whatever. So they're really big on these fake solutions where they'll say, oh, let's read the Fair Play book. I know you've been asking me to do it for 6 years. Let's read it now. And so then you'll fight your way through the book. It'll take 18 months. You'll spend endless hours fighting about each task card. All of these fake solutions are like really about buying time and about the appearance of change instead of actual change. Like, he can propose meaningful change and implement it right now. Maybe it does take some time to get to 50-50. Maybe it does take some time to recover from years of verbal abuse or whatever, but like, he can start doing it. He can propose a meaningful solution like right now, this moment, today.
Yeah, certainly. And the thing is change can't depend on someone's mental state. It changes action. And so I'm going to call a therapist. It's like, okay, that's fine. That's your shit. Like, you want to do that in free time. That's fine. What I need for you is to, for example, get up with the kids.
Yeah.
And getting up with the kids is not something that you can say, oh, well, I have ADD, so I'm not good at paying the bills or something like that. You can't really mental health your way out of something like getting up with the kids. If there's some extenuating circumstance, like he's a police officer who works night shift. Yeah. It's like, okay, then we'll choose a different example. Okay. But, you know, there are absolutely concrete things that someone can do to show that they're actually committed to making these changes. And it doesn't have to all be at once, because that's just like not how anyone changes anything about their life. Like, you can't just wake up and be completely different, but you can absolutely immediately start doing something differently.
Well, and, you know, not just thinking through this while you were talking, I was thinking about this, and it just dawned on me that I think maybe one of the signs of like a healthy relationship is that when the other person voices concerns, you start offering things you can do to help. You know, there's this stereotype of men trying to solve women's problems by telling them like what the women should do differently. But what Jeff and I often have happen when we are venting to one another about our various problems is he'll say, oh, well, let me just do this and that'll help. And I'll start suggesting things that I can do, to the point where like sometimes it becomes a problem where Jeff's like, no, I don't want you to propose right. that you do more of this. I just want you to listen to me vent.
I want to be able to complain about this thing yeah. without you being like, oh, well, I'll do all of these things so that you don't have to deal with that anymore. I'm like, no, I'm not saying that.
But we both have this impulse of like, if the other person is overwhelmed, oh, okay, here are 5 things that I can do right now to help you. And that's because we love each other.
Mm.
And I think that if you're not seeing that in your partner, if your partner is seeing you suffer and they don't have a single idea on their own of what they could do to help you, I think that's a really bad sign.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, like, even like small stuff, like, you know, Zahn has done something, so I'm going to pick our daughter up from school as often as I possibly can, you know, to at least start getting her like 40 minutes here, 40 minutes there, and like, you know, stuff like that, where it's just like, or like I've had some crazy work time, and so I'm gonna take you know, one of our daughters in the morning as often as I can for the next few weeks to try to balance things out. Like, I just do that because, like, that's the right thing to do.
Yeah. And it's also, like, we do a lot of balance over time. Our jobs are such that we're not, like, working 9 to 5. You know, Jeff will have periods of time where he's actually working, like, 80 to 100-hour weeks, you know, staying up half the night working and all of that.
It happens.
Because that's, like, the nature of the work. And then, you know, after a few weeks of that, it will calm down. And so, you know, I'm bearing the brunt of most of the labor during those periods of time. And then when it calms down, like, we switch back.
But also, like, just to clarify, if I have to get up early because I have to go to court or something, like, I still get up. I still make breakfast. I still, like, make the kids lunch. Like, this shit is not an excuse. Yeah. like, obviously I can't get someone from school if I'm in court. So, like, you know, that's the sort of slack that, you know, needs to be picked up. But, like, you don't just give up on everything because you're busy, because, like, you know, life is hard, like, and you just gotta...
Men are constantly looking for, like, hall passes where they've, like, technically right. checked the box of, like, well, you know, I have to be there at 8 o'clock and, you know, I only have 15 minutes to give in the morning because of that. So I'm not going to give any time at all. It's like, well, actually, you should give the 15 minutes.
Well, and you should just get up an extra 15 minutes early that day. And, you know, most people don't have jobs like this where they have these big things come up. Like, most people are just 9 to 5 and it's not that hard.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing is, like, men just weaponize their jobs in such a weird way. And they lionize their jobs. I'm a provider. If you're not providing your partner with, like, emotional support, quality sex, a safe home, like, a meaningful co-parent, you're not a provider. You just have a fucking job, which is something everybody has to have. Like, it's not special. You're not special because you work for pay. And, like, I just really wish we could get past this thing of, like, well, men are providers because they work for pay. Almost as many women work as men.
Yeah. So, I forget what I was going to say.
Well, you have to remember it.
I know, but there's just so much pressure.
Oh. We'll say something different.
Well, oh, I guess what I was going to say is, it's just like, you know, it sounds silly, I guess, but, you know, like, when you could do something nice for another person, you feel good about it.
Yeah.
And I think what so many partners don't realize is, like, when you actually do something nice for your spouse or when you actually do something nice for your kids, you actually feel good.
Yeah.
And that's what I think so many men just don't comprehend at all.
Well, I think a lot of men are going through their lives without any meaningful emotional connection to anyone or anything. And when you don't have that, you have to seek other sources of pleasure that are much emptier. And so it becomes this self-replicating cycle of, you know, they feel empty because they haven't nurtured any connection with their spouse or their kids or their family. And so, you know, by God, I'm going to have my golf or I'm going to make this whole fucking family pay.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're obviously talking mostly about parents when we're talking about these relationships.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, kids are when they're real, when the shit really hits the fan.
But it begins before kids. There are warning signs.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, someone asked me recently, like, why do things change so dramatically when kids arrive? Like, why do men, like, show their true colors? And I don't actually think that's what's going on. I think what's happening is there is more work when there are kids. And so what happens is the woman increases her work and the man doesn't increase his. So let's say you had to spend like an hour on home maintenance a day before the kids. If she's spending 45 minutes and he's spending 15, you know, that's a pretty significant disparity, but it doesn't seem that significant because it's not a lot of time. You know, when you project that out to kids, it becomes a lot more time, especially if he still keeps his 15 minutes and she's increasing to, you know, all day.
I think another thing that's going on in a lot of relationships, and, like, this is really easy, is for really easy for things to start to slide, is if a man gets away with something once, he's gonna think he can do it again. Mm-hmm. So if he comes home late, it's like, and you don't say anything, there's no problem with that. Oh, well, I guess I can do that. If he comes late and, you know, you're pissed off and he gets really threatening and then it goes away. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, well, I guess I can do that. And I think there's a lot of slipping in terms of as soon as something works, like Zahn said before, there's not a lot of masterminding going on in most relationships. Some there certainly is, like there's some where, like, people are really get off on abuse and control. But I think the vast majority of these are just, like, reacting and conditioned responses. And, you know, like I said, if they do something and they get a good result, then they're going to do it again.
Yeah.
And so,
I think this is also why men often get so much worse after a woman threatens to leave but doesn't actually leave, or says she's going to file for divorce but like nothing changes, because they've seen that it can be taken to that point and still nothing happens. And this is like not blaming women for not enforcing their boundaries, because again, there are really high consequences, especially once there are kids. But particularly early in a relationship, like, I mean, you have it straight from the horse's mouth telling you, like, men are testing what they can get away with.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like the velociraptors in Jurassic Park testing the electronic fence for weaknesses, just like that. That guy with the hat said.
Oh my god.
How's that for
That one? That's dark, but that's true.
Yeah, so there that definitely goes on.
Do you do that?
No.
Yeah.
Why would it? I'm trying to think of a context in which I would do that.
Well, the reason I ask is because again, like this dynamic of like man is like caged velociraptor, it is only occurring once the relationship, or really once the man is just fundamentally broken.
Well, but it's not necessarily a conscious process. And so I hesitate when you say, do I do that? I mean, we all are.
I see no signs of it.
No, I actually try to make sure I'm not like, you know, like if you're doing laundry and I don't help and you don't say anything, and then I'm like, oh, well, I guess I don't have to help with the laundry on Tuesdays. You know, that's what I would think if I wanted to get out of doing the laundry, but I don't. And so, yeah, but, you know, we all just try to, I don't know what we all try to do. I can't finish that sentence in a meaningful way.
Well, the other thing that I think is going on is in so many of these relationships, there's so much indirect communication because it's not safe to speak directly. You know, I can come to you and have come to you. Yeah. Okay. So here's an example of like where we actually have to negotiate like fairness. Jeff will have these times where work is really busy and where he just has to spend most of his time at work and I just have to pick up the slack with the kids. And like that's the deal we made because like his work is really important and you know it's important for making a good future for our kids too.
But also I usually spend my time at home when I'm working.
Yeah, yeah. I mean he's doing everything he can. But you know, there'll be things like Jeff usually does the cooking at night, cleans the kitchen, that sort of thing. And I may have to take up some of those things, not cooking, not ever cooking.
No, but you'll like help clean the kitchen.
Yeah.
Instead of like, you know, you usually get like 30-ish minutes after dinner to do whatever you want, and I clean and hang out with the kids. And like, but if I have to work, if I got a brief due, then you'll stay help to clean the kitchen so that I can get to work 30 minutes earlier.
But after the brief is done, sometimes we have to reconfigure responsibilities. Sometimes I have to be like, hey, no, the brief is done. You can't do a cursory cleaning of the kitchen. You have to do the whole thing. And do you start smashing and talking about how like I just have unreasonable standards and no.
I always clean it the same way. It's always good. No.
No, we have to cut that.
Oh, no. No, we don't have to cut that. No, I don't ever try to do a cursory cleaning. I always try to do my best work. But some nights I do leave a couple things. And then you tell me that's not acceptable. And then I say, I will do better.
But the point is, so people get into patterns. We will get into them too when he has these times of like intense work. When I come to you after a time of work, or like then you're reintegrating back into the family, and I tell you, okay, things are like not yet rebalanced. Do you say, all right, let's get out the fair playbook and spend 18 months going through it?
No.
Do you demand that I make a list of each and every task that needs to be done and that we do it in couples therapy for the next 6 years?
No.
What do you do?
I listen and then I'm like, okay, I'll do better.
Yeah. And this is like not what's happening in most relationships.
Yeah.
Because you can't even make it explicit. And then when you do, they'll just do anything to get out of the discussion.
Because they're all just little boys who want their mom to do everything for them.
Yes. And that's why then women don't want to have sex with them.
That and the...
The filth.
The filth. The shit.
The sexual inadequacy.
The shit on the sheets.
Oh, God. So I made Jeff last night read through all of the comments on one of my Men in Hygiene articles because I just really wanted him to understand, like, the scope of how dark things are out there. He did not make it through.
It was pretty, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with these guys not wiping their asses. This is one thing I can say. Okay, so I'm pretty sure that all of the men I've associated with in my adult life, I'm just thinking of them, like people I was, you know, friendly or friends with.
I'm already saying no. I am already saying no.
Would be repulsed by the thought of not wiping their ass after they shit.
No.
I can't.
No.
No?
See, this is the thing, is like the behaviors that you or that anybody sees, I mean, I know you know this, are not necessarily the behaviors that their wives see. And so
what percentage of men do you think are not?
So
are like leaving shit stains at some places.
Okay, so when I surveyed people, I think it was like 22% said that hygiene was like their most significant barrier to having sex with their husband.
That's crazy that it's the most significant, because like most of your respondents have like other problems in their marriage.
Right.
But right. So hygiene is so bad that it's the most.
Yeah.
Like you could still do all these fucked up things and be super selfish.
Or like, okay, so when I posted the question to my group, which has like, this is the private support group, which had like about 1,000 members at the time, I would say that I got probably like 40 or 50 really like horrific responses. And you know, this is like a feminist group, so I don't think it necessarily skews toward people who have bad relationships. There are a lot of people in the group who have good relationships with partners. You know, if I mention Men in Hygiene to like any given woman, she will know what I'm talking about, even if like her current partner does not have that issue. Like she has had a partner with that issue. So, you know, I think the way you're framing it is like, well, they seem normal. They don't seem like they're walking around with shitty asses. But, like, that is normal for men. And I think that's a good, like, I think that's a good analog to kind of a lot of the other things with men. That all of the bad behavior that men engage in is normal. So, like, the men who engage in it seem normal.
Well, and I've really, all of your work has really opened my eyes. And like, so I see men differently now. And I, you know, I'll see someone or be talking to someone. And I'm just like, you must be a fucking nightmare to deal with in your marriage. And so like, I've come, you know, my thinking has evolved dramatically. But when you add like this shit staining aspect of it, like I revert back to my old thinking where it's like, well, it can't be so many, like it can't be like 90% of these marriages are like 90% of these guys are just like fucking nightmares to deal with at home. But so like, but now I know they are, but now I'm like, it can't be that many are just like not showering or not.
Well, think about it this way, like think about like a typical like single man's apartment or like a dorm or like a men's public bathroom. They're the most disgusting things you can imagine.
Yeah, I lived in a fraternity house.
Yeah, what was the level of cleanliness there?
Oh, it was bad.
Yeah,
it was real bad.
Like how bad? Define bad.
I don't know, 100,000 units of badness. Like, I don't know that the toilets were ever cleaned. I also personally felt like they were shocking. Oh, no, you know what? I think I did find out. Yeah, there was one guy who did clean the toilet. Yeah, there was one guy.
There was one guy.
Yeah. Well, found. Why would anyone else do it? Yeah. If someone's doing it already, I mean, right? But no, it was bad. I spent very little time in that place. Like my philosophy in college was if I'm in my dorm, I'm not working. So I stayed in the library, wherever, stayed out of that. So, no, it was bad. We're off track though. What?
Well, I think that this filth thing is kind of like part of the patriarchal playbook.
Oh, this is what I was going to say. So, but also what's surprising, I guess a little bit about it is like, if you, being like filthy and repulsive is not part of this like traditional, like toxic masculinity kind of thing. Like you're supposed to look suave and put together and like wear nice clothes and have a commanding presence and, you know, be confident, and you can't be confident if you're scratching your ass. Like that's what I would expect. But, you know, obviously these guys are not living up to those standards, because they're not living up to any standards, because they're just, like, have no self-respect, I guess.
Yeah, but, I mean, the flip side is, like, look at someone like Andrew Tate. Like, he looks like... I'm trying to avoid saying like, he looks name. Like someone who smells bad. Like, he looks like he has bad hygiene.
He looks like over-colognd, I think.
Well, I mean...
I don't want to talk about that. That guy needs to be irrelevant.
You know, I think with some of these guys, like you said, there's, like, this testing to see what you can get away with.
For sure.
And, you know, there's, like, a laziness element of it. And then when you see that you can get away with the bad hygiene, I think it becomes a proxy for, like, all the other things you can get away with.
There is definitely, like, look how disgusting I can make myself, sexism. You've encountered it.
Say more.
I don't want to say any names. Well, like, I'm going to make myself repulsive to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do it to show you that I can do it.
Yeah.
And it's like a flex.
Yeah.
Guys who like know something about your work, and so they want to make themselves seem like they're sexists.
Yeah.
Like they present as a sexist, almost to like, you know. I don't know if it's a power play or if it's, like, misplaced humor.
Yeah, we've, like, encountered men, like, acquaintances, working world, who, like, make a big show of how, like, sexist they are once they learn about my work. And I think that's, like, similar to, like, the disgusting thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, look how. That's yeah.
That's what I mean. Yeah, so, like, you know.
Because they don't want to be judged on their own terms, so they just like accept my terms of like, oh yes, I am terrible.
There's also like this strong contingent, there's strong kind of belief in men of like, I should be accepted no matter what.
Yes.
And so yes. As soon as you question, you know, hey, could you, you know, your breath stinks, it's like, well, I'm gonna show you,
no matter what,
you should love me no matter what, now I'm gonna make it even stinkier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that dynamic plays out a lot. I don't know where men get this idea that they're entitled to this like unquestioned.
Well, because men are never taught that they have to earn love. They're never taught that they have to earn relationships. Like our entire lives, women are socialized to like believe that we are unworthy, and to believe that it is a gift for men to be willing to be with us.
Mm-hmm.
And that our bodies are gross and unworthy, and that, you know, we're shameful for wanting anything. You know, you're bad if you want a birthday present. And men are just taught that, like, yeah, if you want it, it should be yours. And so, of course, she should have sex with you no matter what you do or how you look or how you behave during sex or anything else.
I think men are taught more specifically, they're taught, like, there's a pursuit. You have to earn into the relationship. But once you're in the relationship, that's done. It's yours. You're entitled to it. You know, she is your property. She cannot look at other guys. She cannot talk to other guys. And like, so there's like a charm, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to pursue the girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's definitely like ingrained in it. But it's like once you get her, you got her, and that's the end.
Yeah, I think that certainly explains the, like, well, my wife left for no reason, you know, she's boycotting sex for no reason sort of dynamic. Like, you got your appliance, you paid for it.
Right.
It's paid in full. It's supposed to be yours now.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, it's a property thing, right? Like, it's like, yeah. I can tell her who she can look at, and mm-hmm. all of that is fine because, like, she is mine, and that's how men are definitely, like, raised to think about relationships, and that's definitely, like, reflected in, I mean, so many of, like, even songs, like, some of these lyrics of some of these songs, you know, Watching You, what's
that song? Oh, God. Yeah, that Sting song.
Yeah, super creepy stuff. But that's what we hear, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's normalized.
Yeah, it's ownership, and yeah, you're right. So, okay, so ownership and women as objects just always goes back to this as explanations for why men behave the way they do. But I think a really important thing to keep in mind is that, you know, it's not just men behaving this way. It's our society viewing the way men behave as, like, not that bad and normal. And that, too, is rooted in the idea that women are possessions. That, too, is rooted in the idea that women owe men something that men don't owe women. And once you abandon those ideas, kind of everything that's happening just becomes very clear, I think.
So, like, I guess it seems like you have two kind of tracks, and, well, multiple tracks in, like, what you're doing. But, like, one is, like, getting women to realize this on the front end. Mm-hmm. And then the other is, like, dealing with it when they're already in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, like, what do you do?
What do?
Yeah, what do?
When
I mean, like,
when women are in
this, is a real problem.
Yes, Jeff.
that it's so apparent that, like, that the world needed you to like put it in front of them.
Well, I mean, it's been a problem. It's been a problem well before I was even breathing, let alone talking about it. And, you know, I think that this is one of the challenges of my work, is that when we're doing this feminist advocacy kind of stuff, particularly in, like, a social media world where you have to keep an audience, people often want to quickly pivot to this, like, self-help kind of stuff. And that's how you get into this, like, buy my course, you know, buy my book. Here are the 5 ways to finally get him to listen to you. And I have explicitly and aggressively avoided doing that because for patriarchy to end, the people who created it have to stop buying into it, and that's men. And you can't communicate your way into him thinking that you're a human who matters. And so, you know, this begins before the relationships start. I've said this a million times. Like, we have to render these men fully unfuckable. We have to become confident being single, because the primary way that patriarchy gets control of women, especially now, especially in this political climate where we're trying to prevent women from getting divorced, where we're trying to force women into pregnancies, where we're trying to do all of these awful things, is by romantic relationships with men, and especially romantic relationships with men that then end in having children. Because once you've got those children, he can use them to control you. So, you know, there is no quick fix. I do think that women who are in these relationships need to pivot hard away from, am I overreacting? Am I unreasonable? What do I need to do differently? Pivot away from analyzing every single thing he's doing. I think it is really important to accept the kind of relationship that you are in and say, I am in a relationship with the patriarchy. My oppressor is in my bed, and he's going to use this playbook because they all use the playbook. So how can I weaponize the playbook against him? How can I stop allowing him to take up so much of my time? How can I protect myself given that these are the confines I find myself in? And the individual answer is going to vary from person to person. Often the answer is, stop going to couples therapy. That's an hour a week you can get back. You know, stop trying to convince him to change because he's not going to change. Stop doing anything that makes his life better. He doesn't need you to do his fucking laundry. You know, that's where we talk about like quiet quitting. Like, what can you do to take back a little bit of your life from this person who's trying to steal as much of it as he possibly can?
I think there's a value too in like the laundry thing, for example. It's like, I don't know anything about relationships, but make them make it explicit.
Mm-hmm.
And like that, yeah. That's like kind of a thing I have of like just dealing with people generally.
Yeah.
But make them make it explicit. And how do you do that? You just stop doing laundry. And yeah. Then what does he say? You have to do my laundry.
Mm-hmm.
Because having this like expectation, this unsaid, unspoken expectation, you know, that's one thing. But like, if he's going to say, no, it's your job to do my laundry, like make him say that. And you know, it puts it out in the open.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the other thing is like patriarchy tears us down and then it traumatizes us. You know, almost all women have been traumatized by patriarchy in some way. And then we enter these relationships with men who further terrorize us and tear us down and weaponize trauma against us and all of that. And then the message that patriarchy gives back to us is, but that's the person from whom you're supposed to derive your sense of self. That's the person from whom you're supposed to get love. So what ends up happening is the very people who are harming us, we women are constantly seeking love from them because it's the only way we've learned to get validation. So women are constantly trying to get their abusers to say, oh, you're right. Oh, you really don't deserve the abuse. Oh, you really are doing a lot with the kids. They're constantly seeking validation from men because, one, they're not getting it anywhere else. Two, their self-esteem has been decimated. And three, they have been indoctrinated to believe that they need these men to validate them. You know, your partner, if he's this kind of man, is never going to offer that validation. And all of the time that you spend seeking it is time that you feel worse and time that you waste. So just accept that he's not going to give it to you because he lacks that ability. Patriarchy has rotted his brain. And this is like an insight that I got from you years ago, Jeff, with relationships with people, that like they're not going to give that thing to you that you keep seeking from them.
Right.
If they were going to give it to you, they already would have.
It's the won't, can't mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah, like I would have these problems with like friends or family members, and I would agonize with Jeff about like, well, why aren't they giving it to me? Do you think it's that they can't do it? Do you think it's that they don't think I deserve it? Like, why? And he would just say like, it doesn't matter if it's won't or can't. It's not going to.
Yeah, just you can't, you know, you have to take what people offer you, and, you know, that's all you can do.
Yeah.
And
if what he's offered you is shit for 20 years, like, you're not going to get more of that. So just try to pull back as much you can from him. Like, even if it's just little teeny tiny things, whatever you can do to take back safely your dignity, do that. There's almost always something.
Well, and it seems like I only know what things you've shared with me from things readers have written, but like, it seems like that kind of unplugging and like giving up on caring,
yeah,
itself is like kind of cathartic and liberating.
Yeah, like women will just post the shitty text that their husbands send to them in my group, and I think that is really powerful because they're no longer invested in, you know, getting this man to love them. They're instead just mocking him among a group of women, and there's a lot of power in laughing at men. I have a number of readers who have started just recording their husbands every time they act shitty so that their husbands know that they're being mocked, and also the husbands behave better when the camera comes out.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
It's like they actually can do it.
Yeah. People losing their shit, and as soon as there's an audience, they snap out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's...
Isn't that weird how they can just snap out of it?
Yeah, it almost suggests that, you know, it's deliberate. It's not that they're neurodivergent or losing control or...
Well, then they know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. If he can snap out of it when there's a police officer or a witness or a camera. It is a conscious choice. He knows what he's doing.
I have another question for you.
Yes.
I have to think about it this first.
Did you have a question and you lost it, or you just felt like you needed to ask me another question?
The latter.
I appreciate the honesty.
I did have a question at some point.
I'm sure you've had many questions. Didn't have one I know when there I said are many that. Things in your brain.
I did want to clarify something. I said that the world needed you to point this out. I think that was inartful. What I should have said and meant to say is that the world needs you to continue, putting all of this into words. There's so many, like, you've got, like, people swarming around you who just, like, think your work is amazing, and it's, I just totally blown away by that. There's something like the obviousness of something, because I said something about like it's so apparent that mm-hmm. it was so apparent that everyone needs you to or needed you to point it out, and like that stuff that's so apparent is like the stuff that just flies by, like,
yeah,
you know, for example, you know, the fact that our country per capita incarcerates more of its citizens than any other country. People are worried about the police state, right, with a new administration. We have our concerns too, but it's like, people, we've been living in a police state. You know, these things that are just normalized, mm-hmm. Everyday things that like we just accept as true and even acknowledge that they're true, but they don't mean anything to us.
Yeah.
And those are often the most like, you know, invidious.
I think that's a good word.
Is that the word I want? I don't know if it is. But, like, those are often the most, like, pernicious and, like, dangerous things. And so, you know, obviously you putting all of this, like, women just read your stuff and they identify with it immediately, which is, like, I mean, if I were a man who, you know, was worried about my relationship or something like that, that would be a wake-up call for me, where like, whoa, like women are like, yeah, she's saying what's true. I don't know at what point there's going to be a wake-up call.
I think it's happening. I think, you know, I think what really has to happen is that women have to get comfortable being single and say just like no more.
That's so hard for women, though.
It's so hard. It's so hard because we're socialized not to do it, and it's so hard because we want kids.
And it's so hard for men. I mean, it's so hard for anyone to be single because, like, we're all taught.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have a spouse to be worthwhile. Like,
well, and that initial, like, rush of someone liking you, I think sometimes, even especially if they're also rejecting you, is intoxicating. And so you have to be really mindful of how those dynamics rope you in if you're going to resist them.
Yeah, they need to replace it with something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like what?
Mushrooms. Hobbies. You know, the comfort of knowing that you are safe, perhaps being more valuable than that, like, initial male validation.
Do women feel safe when they're alone, though? Because that's kind of a scary thing, too, isn't it?
I think that a lot of women feel less safe with a man in their life. A myth that I see going around right now a lot in feminist circles is that, well, at least if you're married, you have some protection against, like, this Trump-Musk administration.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no evidence of that. Like, that's just a that's just a completely offhand, off the wall thing that people say.
Right.
You know, being married has not provided me with any protection from men at all. I still get harassed every time I leave the house. I saw all kinds of problems with men, and I'm someone who's really, like, minimized my interactions with men. So being married has not provided me with any protection. And if I were not married to Jeff and were married to, like, a typical patriarchal man, being married would mean that I was never safe in my house, that I was living with the patriarchy and, you know, living with someone who was oppressing me and harming my children and all of that. Single women are objectively safer. You know, men don't, like, say, oh, well, she's single, so I'm going to harass her. That's just not how it works. They see woman, they say harass.
Yeah, that's all fair.
So I think it feels less safe. And I think that women need to sit with, like, why is that? And there are lots of ways to not be alone that don't involve men. You know, there are, you know, you could platonically marry your best friend. You could.
Who could also be a man, by the way, because there is those.
Yeah, the lavender relationships.
Yeah.
You could draw up a contract with your four closest friends, buy a property together, and, you know, have agreements about how you're going to do things. I think that one thing that marriage does give us is marriage gives us a set of agreements about how we're going to behave. You know, we all have a general understanding of what marriage is, and we can have those kinds of explicit agreements with other people.
Isn't the problem with marriage that we don't have any agreements about how we're going to behave?
Well, So most marriages do not have agreements about how you're going to behave that are explicit. So they default to the patriarchal agreements of, you know, the woman's going to do all the work. The man's going to have all the fun. The woman is going to exist as an object for the man to use, that sort of thing. You know, relationships are much better when you make your agreements explicit. And marriage only feels safer because we have a cultural understanding of what it means. You know, we don't have a cultural understanding that, like, your three best friends are the people that you're going to take everywhere with you, or that they're going to be the people you vacation with, or the people you raise children with, or the people who are with you when you are dying. But they can be. Like, you can do that. And I've especially seen it with the older women I know. Like, my mom had this drum group, and, you know, most of them have outlived or divorced their husbands. And so they're single women now. And they are not alone. Their lives are rich. They're too social for my taste. I would find it overwhelming. They're always together. They support each other through everything. They travel together. And you can do that. And I think that if you look around, you'll see that that's something that a lot of older women are already doing. You know, they tend to have, like, really good friendships, because after you've lived a life with men, you start to see that, like, they're not really the path to not being alone. So things that feel scary are not necessarily dangerous. And I think that women need to sit with, like, why does being single feel scary? It's not because it objectively is more dangerous.
Should we do some patriarchal playbook examples?
Well, do you have some?
I don't know. Say something to me.
Oh, boy.
Let's see if I can do it.
Okay. Let's. I'll make up some common concerns. You didn't do a good job cleaning the kitchen tonight.
Do you have any idea how stressed I am right now? Do you have any idea how much work I have to do?
There we go.
You know, I have clients whose lives or livelihoods depend on what I... Yeah, right. 10 minutes later. Longer than it would have taken to just fix the fucking kitchen.
Yeah. Okay. What's another example? Yeah.
I'll probably just say the same thing.
Do you want to make a list of questions for the kids, you know, parent-teacher conference?
I don't know. I'll just go in and see what they have to say.
You know,
Seems like they're doing fine to me.
I think that you yell at the kids too much.
Well, you don't discipline them for anything. You let them get away with everything, right?
I think the kids are watching too much TV when they're with you.
Well, they were watching shows with you the other day. I don't say anything. You know, I don't police your parenting. It's easy. You just get defended. You just, like, basically say, you know, what is it? The thing. Deflect.
Darvo.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, that's it.
And, you know, like, what's really interesting is, like, so we don't have like video recordings of this. And like, I am making up concerns that aren't mine. And because they're like the common things that I see. And Jeff is like following a script that I know is not his. And I am finding myself like having like a like withdraw reaction. Like it feels intimidating to me to like even play through it, because like men are scary.
All right, well, let's try and do it the way we would do it. All right, say something to me and I'll do a real reaction. Just say the same thing.
Oh, okay. Well, so can you get up with the kids earlier in the day? Or can you start getting up with the kids in the morning? Jeff already gets up with
the kids in the morning. I do get up with the kids in the morning. I pride myself on getting, no matter how sick I feel, you know, I would say a few times a year, I don't do it. No, like, well, like, how about the kids are watching too much TV?
Yeah, that's okay, certainly so something you said to me. The kids are watching too much TV on the weekends when you have them.
Yeah, you're right. I've been exhausted. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and that's generally, like, how it goes. And, you know, the nice thing about having a co-parent who shares your values is you have someone who can, like, check your impulses.
Right.
And you have someone who's like feedback you can trust. Like, I know that if Jeff tells me that I'm being too short with the kids, he's not saying that to hurt me.
Right.
He's not saying that to win an argument. He's saying that because he just thinks I'm being too short with the kids. And usually the follow-up question is going to be like, are you okay? Or like, what do you need to like not have that
happen? Yeah, or like, why don't you like get out of here?
Yeah.
And, you know, go downstairs or something and I'll handle them. Because like usually it's because of, you know, the kids have been, you know,
terrorists,
just doing the thing they do.
You don't have to fight for like 30 hours to get to the root cause of something. You know, usually when someone's doing something, you know why. So this is like way off track. But, you know, like you can solve problems in 5 minutes and you can commit to behavior change immediately. You don't have to fight for 20 hours about everything you want your partner to change. And if that is the dynamic in your marriage, or if it's a dynamic of like disappearing things, or he stonewalls for 3 days and then you plead with him and, you know, whatever, he's just weaponizing like the patriarchy stuff.
But also, just like, I hesitate to like try to give any tips for dealing with men, but like what I said before about like make it explicit, like you need to be as explicit and targeted as possible so that the reaction, you know, the reaction you get can be seen for what it is. And so like, you're not teaching the kids enough, or not that like you're letting the kids, I think you're letting the kids watch too much TV.
Yeah.
You know, how much TV do you think they should be watching? Like, because then when you get the defensive reaction, you can just be like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa, you don't want to talk about how much TV our kids are watching? Like pick very targeted things, because, like, it just makes the overreactions all the more apparent, and apparent to you, and it makes, like, deflection even more difficult. Because what I would think the best move for Zahn, if she says, you're letting the kids watch too much TV, well, what about you? Would be like, oh, well, do you think we're both letting them watch too much TV?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, always just make them say the thing that they're actually thinking, but not that you can. And it, like, this doesn't apply to like, you know, someone who's just going to start, you know, escalating and abusing, but like, it's a lot of people are just really bad at speaking directly and speaking simply and using.
And the reason he's suggesting this is not like communicate your partner into better behavior. It's once you see what he really thinks, it's easier for you to disengage from your emotional attachment to what he says. Once you see that what he really thinks is, well, I'm allowed to put them on the TV because I shouldn't really have to be parenting because I'm the man, then it becomes a lot easier to just be like, I don't really give a shit what this dude thinks.
Sure. Well, and also just like, I mean, communicating directly is just good advice for life.
Yeah, true.
I mean, you know,
yeah,
speaking simply. And
well, and women are taught to communicate indirectly and to not assert their needs. And, you know, the more you assert your needs and the more you communicate directly, the more you just have evidence that like he's not going to meet those needs because he doesn't think he has to.
Right. Yeah. This is not like a fix, you know, like the advice column that you critiqued. This is not like that, where like you just need to tell them your needs.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, if they're going to play games, then you need to minimize. And this is what I would do with like a boss.
Yeah.
Or anyone. Or like if a judge is getting on me about something,
mm-hmm.
you know, choose your words carefully, minimize what you say, but make sure each thing you say is you know, short, declarative, to the point,
mm-hmm.
and then remain calm.
Yeah, don't give them the reward, because what a lot of these guys want is they want the big emotional reaction. They want to gaslight you into freaking out.
Right.
And then they want to make you feel bad so that they can withdraw, and you, because you've been socialized to pursue, go beg him back, and then the issue that you have raised disappears. And so you can't give them the reward of that emotional reaction.
Yeah, because that I agree. I mean, I think that's a scary thing. Like if a man does something wrong and the reaction is like, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. He'll be like, what? Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Like, should I be scared?
Yeah. Like, is she going to poison me?
Anyway, I think we've hit our...
Yeah. I think that's it. So, you can find a lot more information on the Liberating Motherhood website. I really recommend checking it out. It's liberatingmotherhood.org. There's a form where you can submit Feminist Advice Friday questions. You can submit podcast vignettes. There's just like a ton of information up there. And I haven't really been pushing the website, but it's like a really useful one-stop shop. Of course, if you're listening to this, you know zahn.substack.com. Our next episode is going to...
Do you want to tell them that you're working on a book?
I am working on a book. It's about postpartum depression, and I am probably going to need people to share stories at some point. So if you submit a podcast vignette and I think it's useful for the book, I may follow up with you. So please, if you're willing to do that, include your email address. Yeah, there's a book. It's coming slowly, but it's coming. Our next episode is going to be with Mary Catherine Starr.
Your next episode.
Yeah.
I'm just a guest. This is...
That's true. Yeah. My next episode, Jeff will not be there, is with Mary Catherine Starr. She writes mom life comics. She also has a book coming out, except that her book is coming out in less than 2 weeks. So we're going to be talking about her book, about the lies we're all sold about motherhood, about how patriarchy affects motherhood, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So that will be out in a week. I highly recommend listening. And if you can, I really hope that you will leave positive reviews of this podcast. It really, really helps with visibility, as does sharing, commenting, engaging on social media. Just kind of the more you post about this podcast, the more visible it becomes. It sucks that I have to ask for that, but like, that's how social media works. So make it more visible, and there will be more episodes.
And there will be more women who think like you.
Yeah, more women who think like you. And that's really what we want, is to get the message out so we can build a better world, so that our generation is the last generation to deal with this absolute fucking bullshit.
And to see, have men think, oh shit.
Yeah. To have men living in fear. It's really men who we want to be. Fearful. Yeah. Okay. So I was fighting with some men on the internet before we started this episode, and I've just remembered some of those fights. We really just want men to live in the kind of fear that they forced us to live in for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. And one of the ways to achieve that is by making more people listen to my podcast. All right. That's it. I'll talk to you guys soon.